Welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast, where we amplify the stories of regular people practicing anti-racism in their everyday lives. Every single one of us has the ability to create real and meaningful change right where we are. I'm your host, Carrie Sawyer, and I've got the stories to prove it. I can't wait to introduce you to these people, these change leaders, people who saw a need and decided to take action. To me, this is so inspiring, showing the powerful idea of everyday activism. I hope that you take away at least some small inspiration and use it to act and create more good in your world too. Let's get started, y'all. Hello and welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. My name is Carrie Sawyer and I will be your host. We have another amazing guest for our conversation today, my friend Grace Yoko. And Grace is amazing. We actually met through Latin dance. Who knew? And I've gotten to have really interesting and insightful conversations with her. And so I was super excited to have her on the podcast for you and for everyone to share her stories and her perspective around anti-racism and advocacy as well. Grace is a former cancer researcher turned life science digital and content marketer. She's one of the founding chapter members for the Asian Employee Resource Group at Thermo Fisher Scientific's Carlsbad site, and she is a passionate DEI advocate. Please join me in welcoming Grace Yoko to the Inclusion First Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Inclusion First Podcast. We have the amazing Grace here today. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Grace, welcome to the Inclusion First Podcast. How are you today?
Carrie, you're amazing. I hope you can hear in my voice that I'm smiling. I'm doing well being here with you, talking to you. And I'm Grace Eco. I am a content marketer for the life sciences, and I also have a penchant for plants. So thank you so much for having me.
That's like its own separate podcast for plants. I want to know. Oh, I've seen your pictures on Instagram. They're so pretty and so good.
Yes, thank you.
She certainly does. Awesome. Well, Grace, I'm so excited that you're here today and that you are going to have this conversation with me. And so we're just going to dive right into the first question. And we're going to talk about anti-racism. So, Grace, from your perspective, from your experience, from everything that you've been learning, you know, in your journey, talk a little bit about what anti-racism means to you and what that looks like in practice.
That's a great question, Carrie. If you think about anti-racism and like the opposite of anti is pro. So like for me, it's okay, how can I be proactive in this regard? And one of the first things that comes to mind is building bridges. How can I build a bridge between myself and my own specific values with somebody who has different values? And that's usually the first step that I take.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love the words that you use around proactive, right? Because anti-racism is all about like just not waiting for something to happen, really thinking about how can you be that interrupter. So I think that that's super powerful. And then the building bridges, because when we think about racism, so often it is about like the things that divide us and the polarizing topics. But at the end of the day, the reason why those things feel so bad is because we're humans and we're always seeking like connection and harmony and all of these different things. And so how do you build those bridges back to each other, those bridges across those disconnects and divides, and in some cases, even like, you know, misunderstandings, especially when we think about different groups of minorities and different groups of people, like we share a lot of things. We struggle with a lot of the same things, even like culturally within our cultures and across cultures. And we're kind of in these silos. And so I love like the visual of like the bridge and how do you build bridges back as part of the anti-racism work and part of your anti-racism journey. I think that's super powerful.
Super powerful. Yeah. Establishing common ground, which I think people forget about because you're right. It's so polarized today. it seems like there's just huge catastrophes that happen, one right after another, something else that we didn't need going on in the world. And it's hard to forget, I think. But once you can identify common ground or a shared purpose, a shared goal, I think that's the first step and almost that first break or shift in energy needed. So if there's like two people that are in direct opposition in values or even just in dialogue, but you shift things around by coming to something that they can both agree on, it becomes a totally different conversation at that point, and different energy.
Yes, I absolutely agree. So Grace, talk to me a little bit about your anti-racism journey and like how that started and like how it's progressing, like where you are on it now. And you know, we talk a lot about it being a journey, not like this like one and done thing, because there's always so much to learn. It's such a dynamic world that we live in. There's always something else happening, another opportunity for other bridges. And I would just love to hear a little bit about, you know, your experience, especially when we have started to think about, you know, we didn't talk about anti-racism as like a term and like as a thing, even though we were doing it, you know, before. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey and kind of where you are now.
Definitely. I would say my journey started probably when I became the most conscious about anti-racism, when I got called a racist when I was 10 years old by another 10-year-old.
What?
True story. I was devastated, but here's what happened, from my memory. My father is in the military. We'd moved to Japan. So I was in a new school and getting to know all the other students. The demographic of the students was definitely different from my previous elementary school from San Diego, California. And so I was noticing, the differences, which I think as a child, I think that can happen. I think children are just very observant. So they're curious. They find the things that are the same. They find the things that are different. And so I was describing somebody that I had just met but forgotten their name. And she had stood out to me because she, clearly had some African heritage. And her hair had the volume that in my mind, when I was 10 years old, I don't remember ever seeing anything like that. So it was like this iconic look. And when I was trying to recall her name and couldn't remember her name, I described her as, the African-American girl to my classmate. Upon which that classmate immediately said, "That's Jennifer. And Jennifer is not African-American. She's actually half Filipino, half African-American. Are you racist?" And I was devastated because being a new student in a new school, trying to desperately make new friends and new connections, I had basically started off on the wrong foot and was now actually branded a racist. So I had to scramble back from that. But, I didn't understand actually what I had done wrong. And so that's what started my journey. And I think to this day, there's so much about anti-racism too is, speaks to unity and one world. And I think there's the aspect where it's taboo to talk about differences, but I think I lean towards, hey, there's nothing wrong with acknowledging differences for the sake of understanding and actually, empathizing in order to build an authentic bridge. It's been a journey, but that was one of my earliest childhood memories that has stuck with me for a long time.
Wow. That is an amazing story, Grace. And thank you so much for being vulnerable and sharing that with everyone today. And I want to unpack this because I don't know that you did do anything wrong. Besides, like, you identified her as African-American. She wasn't, but okay. Like, who has been given the wrong race before?
She was half.
She was half. So you weren't totally wrong.
I was only half wrong.
But the thing is, like, stating someone's race or someone's gender or some anything about someone isn't inherently any kind of is. Like, it's not racist to say that I am Black because I am Black. Now, there's obviously subtlety in language, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, where you're like, oh, she's Black. Okay, that's different than like, oh, the Black girl over there. That's just an identifying fact kind of thing. And so that's one of the, I think, false beliefs that we have about racism is that if you acknowledge someone's difference, if you acknowledge someone's race, then you're being racist. The acknowledgement of race is racist, which is totally wrong. Everyone does have a race and ethnicity. So it's not wrong to mention that. What we do with that information, is what leads us down one path or another path, and how we treat people differently, where our biases come in. And, you know, there's so much beauty in our differences, and it's important to acknowledge it. And actually, I mean, this is like the idea of colorblind. People are like, I don't see color. I treat everyone the same. Number one, yes, you do. You have eyes. Number two, no, you don't. You have bias. It's just not possible to be colorblind. But besides the fact that it's just not possible to be colorblind, no one's asking you to do that. I don't want you to erase me. I don't want you to erase my race or my culture or my height or my challenges or my, you know, uniqueness. I want those things to be celebrated and to be acknowledged and to be important and special, not to be invisible to you. They're not doing me a favor by like pretending like everything is the same for me as it is for you, because it's not. And we can't get to the bottom of anything if we're kind of in this, like, you know, denial of like the reality that we are different, and there's nothing wrong with that. And so I think as a young girl, when you saw the differences, I'm sure moving to Japan, you were noticing all kinds of differences, because
there's a lot, a
different world. And what you thought was a super harmless call out turned out to be like, you know, feeling like you stuck your foot in your mouth. But at the same time, it also just demonstrated like the other young girl's misunderstanding of what racism is, because why was it okay for her to say that Jennifer was half African-American and half Filipino, but it wasn't okay for you to, right? Even if you were slightly off, because you
never realized that
that she was, you know, also half Filipino, right? And so we just have this fundamental misunderstanding. People don't want to have their culture erased or their gender erased or their race erased. We want them to be celebrated just as much as we celebrate the similarities that we have in this world. I'm working on my book that has to do with all the different questions that people asked. And this topic comes up in one of the later chapters. There is no such thing as colorblind, and what can we, how can we value our differences just as much as we value our similarities? Because there's just as many. And again, going back to this bridge metaphor, we're going to use that over and over, and I might borrow that for future work and future talks as well. But, we can create bridges to those differences. And then there's always, always, always similarities. Even if they look different, we both might love cooking. Maybe it's a different cuisine, but we still understand the love of cooking. We both might suffer from mental illness. It looks different, manifests differently. Our cultures may or may not like treat them differently, but we still have that shared understanding, regardless of whether it's something positive or negative. We have all these similarities that just add into this beautiful like stew, if you will, of the differences. And that is really what makes our world rich. And we experience that richness all the time. And then when we talk about race, we're like, like all of a sudden it's a bad thing. And it's not. And so just remembering that and knowing that different people have different levels of understanding. But that's a big one. Like, acknowledging race is not racist at any age. But of course, you all are 10. How do you know that? So
context matters.
Yes, absolutely. So this was kind of your like first call out, one of the first ones, like, you know, I definitely don't want to be racist. I don't want anyone to think that I'm racist. And I mean, that's also another common thing. And the thing is, like, we live in a world, and especially here in the West and in the US, and we live in a society where we live in a racist soup. Like, it's just the ideals and some of the values and the things that we're hearing, the socialization, the media, like, we're getting inundated by all these like covertly and overtly racist things all the time. And that seeps into us. And there's nothing that we can do about it other than notice it and do something to undo it. Right. And so I would love to know, like, all right, so this girl said you were racist, or asked you if you were racist. Like, what did you do after that? Like, how did that kind of change how you were navigating that space?
Yeah, I mean, immediately I was stunned. And so I think, you know, in that year, I was much more careful. It might have actually stunted my ability to, you know, create relationships. It definitely, my confidence had taken a hit. But I think beyond that, and having had that experience early on, it made me conscious about that. And, you know, perhaps also people's sensitivities to it. So I think that I learned then to at least try to take better care with my interactions with people, as well as to try and instill, you know, a sense of inclusivity and belonging, establish that as early as I could, which I won't lie, probably did involve borrowing, you know, putting on some colorblind glasses to try and exude that. But nowadays, I think one of the things that we're experiencing in recent times is the very frank conversations and dialogues around anti-racism. And they can get heated and polarized, but I think that is in a lot of ways much better, because we're openly talking about it in podcasts like this, or, you know, specifically addressing these nuances and aspects to it. I'm learning so much more. And I think it's never ending. And I wonder too, that memory must have stuck with me, because if we fast forward decades later, and, you know, I'm in my place of employment and have established a space of trust with my team's director at the time, I could have these very frank conversations with her. And I think I actually felt safe and in a supportive environment where, you know, I came out and asked her this question that really in hindsight has just haunted me since that memory from fifth grade when I was 10. Because this director, whom, you know, hopefully you'll meet, Carrie. Actually, I think you have. It's Joanne McGregor. I asked Joe, is it offensive to say black or to use the word black? You know, is there something wrong with that? Or African American? And, you know, in her case specifically, she prefers black. And she opened my eyes to the black experience and how that differs, whether you're here, you know, from the States, or you're from Africa, or you grew up in the UK, like she did. She grew up in London. So it actually grates on her when people see her here in San Diego and, you know, assume she's African American. Yeah. She's like, oh, no, I'm not. I'm, you know, black. I'm from London. And I just loved having conversations like that and understanding her point of view.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And that's really powerful. And, you know, you had a relationship with her, you have a relationship with her. So you felt comfortable in asking her this question, and she felt comfortable in asking this or answering the question. Right. And I think that that's a super important point to reiterate, because you have to have a relationship with someone before you can go and ask some of these more sensitive questions. Because if you don't, then it just feels really awkward and sometimes icky to the person, and intrusive even to the person that you're talking to. And so when you have friends, when you have colleagues, when you have people that you've built this rapport with, you're going to get grace the same way that you would give grace to someone who you already know, versus a stranger or an acquaintance demanding what feels like demanding information from you around a topic that you're like, what? Where did this come from? Out of the blue. Versus, like, even if, you know, it came out of the blue with your Joanne, like, she's still your friend. And she's like, hey, I have a question for you. And it's gonna maybe come off the wall, but I still have this question, and you don't have to answer it if you don't want to, but I'd like to, you know, it'd be just, I'm just interested in learning more about this. And so being able to go there with someone and having that relationship to kind of fall back on. So, you know, if you did say the wrong thing or weren't super sure about the correct way to approach something, they can be like, okay, Grace, like, here's the way. I have a couple of friends like this. My favorite example is my friend Marta, and she's from Spain. And so, again, she's lived in the US for a long time at this point, but it's a completely different culture, and how they navigate race is also different. And so she'll be like, you know, Marta touches my hair all the time, but she's one of my close friends and I love her. And she's like, oh, I heard I wasn't supposed to touch your hair. I can stop. And I was like, well, you're my good friend and it's totally fine for you to admire her. I touch her hair too. So it's fine. Right. But stranger danger. Don't ever touch really anyone's hair, specifically Black people. But I don't think anyone wants strangers to do that. And so there's this different rapport that happens. People are given different, you know, allowances and grace and opportunity to discuss. And I think that that's definitely a beautiful thing. And I really like that she shared with you like her answer. And I think that when you have questions like that, asking and being aware of who you're asking, if it's appropriate to ask them at all, if it's appropriate to ask them at this time or at all, and then giving people an out, and then being okay if they take that out and not being offended, because there could be a million reasons why they don't want to talk about that right there with you or just at that time or what have you. And so being considerate and kind of thinking about this, because if you put someone in an awkward situation, it's going to be an awkward answer and maybe and make them really uncomfortable. And that's not your intention at most cases. I'm like, you know, I'm thinking about in a meeting at work versus like, you know, on a coffee break or on a walk or when you're hanging out on the weekend, totally different things. And so really being aware when you're asking sensitive questions, no matter what they are, honestly, I think I gave this example recently, but like having a serious conversation over Thai in a restaurant, no, having it at home is a lot better, right? Or somewhere private. And then, you know, she shared her experience and her preferences, and everyone is different. Even people of the same race, the same color, maybe on the outside, she looks like an African-American because that's what African-Americans look like. But if you put her in London, she would look like a Black person in London because that's what Black people in London look like. We don't have the context to know exactly where anyone is from. And so asking those questions and then knowing that she might prefer that, but someone else might prefer something different. And so this kind of even the, okay, so do people like Black, African-American, or something else that we don't even normally talk about that? There's Caribbean Africans, there's Afro-Latinos, there's all these different people that African-American is just not the right title for them, right? And maybe they don't want to be called Black either. So just asking and giving people space to answer or not, based on the caveat that I previously mentioned.
Definitely. I realized that that was a gift. And yes. Yeah, and I had that, you know, not everybody has that opportunity or that relationship or that gift. So definitely feel unique in that way.
Yeah, I love those words. It was a gift. When someone opens up to you and shares themselves anything, we're not just talking about race, it is a gift. And so really being respectful of that, treasuring that, and keeping that, you know, in confidence and all of those things are super important. The same way that you would want if you shared something personal with someone else. And that's, you know, that's about the relationships that we keep and that we build and that we cherish. So I think that's really, I love it. Awesome, Grace. So tell me a little bit more about some of the other things that you're, you know, I know you're doing different kinds of things through your work, and getting involved in different networks and things of that nature. I'd love to hear, you know, how your journey has continued and how you're making like your unique difference when it comes to anti-racism, when it comes to supporting the work and moving things forward.
Thanks, Carrie. Within my work, we are also lucky to have these employee resource groups. Mm. And in 2018, towards the tail end of that year, I was able to help stand up the first employee resource group chapter locally for the Asian employee resource group, and we had not had one of those before. So it was my first time doing that, being involved, and I loved it. You know, it was nice to see kind of the solidarity, help promote a safe space within the workplace where we could talk about shared experiences, you know, and if you're comfortable, things like unconscious bias, or how to address microaggressions, macroaggressions even, and topics like that, which actually become almost cross employee resource group activities. Mm-hmm. You know, we regularly do have workshops, talks, and events where employees can learn from each other. And being a part of that, I think, is really special. You know, especially we spend so much time at work, and you're encouraged to bring your whole self to work, your authentic self. But what's really going to enable people to do that is creating an environment that's psychologically safe, that is inclusive, where, you know, colleagues are proactively instilling a sense of belonging. So it's nice to be a part of that, actually build that culture at work.
That's amazing. And so this is, the network is still going strong. Like, what kinds of things have you been able to do or are kind of focused on with that new network? I mean, it's not new anymore, but at the time.
Right. One of my favorite things is, you know, during the high intensity period for BLM in the summer of 2020, the employee resource groups collaborated to put on talks, you know, specifically during this time, this difficult time. And so the Asian ERG partnered with the African Heritage ERG, and we brought a coworker on, someone actually, Carrie, another person I hope you'll meet, for them to talk about their experiences and, you know, share their story, really, because it wasn't their job to educate. It never is. So that distinction was made, but sharing the stories and some resources that had been helpful was really great and well received at work, especially because people, you know, are aware of what's happening, want to do something, but then don't know where to start. So having that point of connection is really valuable and a good thing to do in the workplace. So I would say that was one of my favorite things to be involved with. And I can't take credit for the idea. It was actually another colleague within the Asian ERG who helped to facilitate that. But I do love the end result. We got a lot of feedback, not only from colleagues, but from leadership, of how meaningful that was to have an event like that during that time.
Yeah, I love that. I love the cross-group collaboration. So there's more bridge examples. I love creating a space for this at work, because, and one thing that the pandemic has done is blow up the work-life balance, like, myth. It was always a myth. Work and life are happening together, interspersed at the same time. And so this idea, oh, we don't talk about this at work, or this isn't something that affects us at work. This is affecting everyone in all aspects of their life, when they go home, when they're at work, when they're driving, when they're at the grocery store. And so how do we create spaces for people to talk and for people to learn? And I love what you said about, you know, not being anyone's job to educate anyone else. It really isn't. But luckily, there are all these generous souls out there who are willing to stand up and raise their hand and say, hey, you know what? I will share. I will educate. And I will, you know, do my part in that way. There's lots of different ways that you can do your part. And if you don't, you know, as a person of color, if you don't feel like it right now because you're tired or mad or any of those things, that's totally all valid too. And so creating spaces for people to stand up and say, hey, I will do that, and share that gift of those stories and that vulnerability and those perspectives. Because I think that it's really important for people to just know that this is happening right around the corner, right around the cubicle, right around the bend from where they are. It's so easy to distance ourselves from it. And especially when it comes to a topic like race, where we're like, oh, I'm not racist and I don't have anything to do with that because I don't want you to think that I'm racist, right? And so being able to, like, know, hey, that person that I know, that I've seen, is sharing these stories, it makes it so much more real and changes your perspective and even, like, your, like your responsibility almost. Like, I should be more aware. I should be more conscious. I should be more just, like, open to these things that are happening around me so that I can be an ally, so that I can be a bridge, so that I can be a support, versus just being this kind of oblivious, like, you know, mover through the space. And not everyone feels that call, but I think a lot of us do, you know, there's also people who are just, like, racist and they're okay with it. they're in the minority by a lot. There are people who are, you know, activists and on the activism spectrum who are doing their part, whether large or small, to change things. And then there's a lot of people in the middle who are like, I would help, but I'm not really sure, or I don't want to say the wrong thing, so I'm just going to sit back here, right? So how do we activate those people in the middle? By stories, by sharing, by people, personal connections, and getting to see, hey, this is happening right here to her. Oh, wow, I didn't know. Maybe I need to like do a little more digging into this and see how I might be a support versus versus not, even if it's accidental, right? So I think that it can be an activator to both share those stories and to be on the receiving end of that as well.
Totally agree.
Awesome. So Grace, what would you say is like one of the most important things that you have learned like doing this work through your employee network and your resource group there, supporting Asian employees? What's the most important thing that you've really learned? It could be about yourself. It could be about anything. I'm super interested.
Probably that I have a lot more work to do. I've actually, you know, been able to maybe consciously point out biases in my own, and you know, learn about things actually that could potentially be offensive that I didn't realize before, sad as it is to say. But I think that's where I appreciate the rigor around like this formal programs that are diversity inclusion in the workplace, and experts, you know, like yourself, Carrie, that will come and consult, because there's definitely like a way and almost a syllabus, if you will, of how we can approach this systematically when it comes to like an organization, a place of work. So I'm constantly learning, and you know, there's also like a, from a personal standpoint, a great reckoning I would say I have to do, especially you know, what was going on and still going on with BLM has inspired me just to learn more about my cultural history, being ethnically from the Philippines. And so now I kind of, in my mind, will grapple with sometimes how do I truly embrace inclusivity, but also, you know, if I'm learning something new regarding colonization, allow myself to feel that hurt and that resentment from something I'm just realizing from history. So, you know, those are things that I never had to contend with before. And even though it might not always feel good to have to do so, it's almost like you have both eyes wide open now. So you just tend to then approach life and interactions with people with more openness and more listening for the sake of listening and understanding instead of responding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I love that. Even that general sentiment of there's so much more to learn. And I feel that way. I feel that way too, because we're talking about anti-racism. That's like one intersection of your identity. And even in that, like there's there's fractures and fragments. But that's just one. And so if we think about, you know, it's not even possible for me to know everything about being Black or everything about being a woman or everything about being an American. It's not possible. And so if we think about, you know, that learning journey and how different information comes to us, it's never ending. And I want to learn about more than just my own intersections. I want to understand more about the trans community and how I can be a support there. You know, a question that I had as you were talking, that's very parallel to your like Black question that you had for your friend. I'm like, well, Grace, one thing that I always wonder is like, when I say Asian, I feel like it's the worst descriptor ever. And I'm like, even almost being offensive by saying Asian, because you're Asian, yes, but like there's so many different ethnicities balled up into one. And this whole, like, as Americans, I feel like, you know, And it's not just us. Like, we've been lazy and like, oh, all of a certain kind of person looks the same. All Black people look the same. All Asian people look the same. Like, no, they don't actually. I'm like, how can I learn how to distinguish between the different races? So instead of saying that you're Chinese, or that you're Asian, I say that you're Chinese or that you're Filipino or that you're Vietnamese. Like, I feel like using Asian is like this cop out. And especially because of the work that I'm doing, I'm like, what should I say instead of that? But then maybe the person I'm talking to, like, I can't, they might not want to say, I don't know you, Carrie. Like, I don't want to tell you what my heritage is. So is it even appropriate for me to ask them? And, you know, taking my own advice, it depends on my relationship, right? And the mood that they're in, which I can't know. So can you shed some light for me? My question is it okay to say Asian? Is there a better way to talk about all the groups that are Asian, but mostly even if I want to relate to one person or one group, like, how can I make that connection? And, you know, just off the top of your head, like, I know that there's probably different people who would answer this question in different ways. So we're not holding you to anything, but I'm just curious because it's been like a burning question in my mind for a while. And I'm just like, no, whenever I do a survey, I'm like, I'm putting all the main, like, I'm like looking up the demographics of the world and putting the top 10 on there for Asian. I'm not going to say Asian. I'm going to put up the top 10 ethnicities because it's not cool to do that, and expanding for other races too. But anyways, that was my whole vulnerable like rant that got really nervous. And I just want to know what you think.
I love that, Carrie. I mean, I love when people just come with open curiosity. There's nothing ever offensive about that. And like we mentioned before too, context, right? And relationship, the nature of the relationship you have with the person has to be taken into consideration. But honestly, when strangers ask me, I try not to take it as like a microaggression. In some cases it can be, but I find myself answering their questions. I think that I like to, and I like to shed light where I can. It's not offensive to me to be called Asian or to have it as a blanket statement. I just learned yesterday that there are 49 Asian countries, you know, across the continent, and including the islands of Polynesia, macro, micronesia. So there's a lot going on there, but it's also kind of, you know, our reality, the fact that, oh, the Asian girl is so much more accepted and commonplace, and in contrast to, you know, we're more likely to say the Italian guy or the guy from Scotland versus the European American or the European person, you know, like people are just more familiar with Europe, with you know, the West, which is like a whole nother conversation, and how that's just petered into just, you know, directions, how we view maps, how things are categorized. Yeah, so I think that ties into it, and I'm okay with Asian. I think everybody understands that's kind of our reality. I love it when people want to know more because they're genuinely trying to like understand and make connections.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you so much for answering that. And I guess what? Today, I just learned that there are 49 different Asian countries, so identities. So there you go. Just moments ago, people, you heard it here. And a lot of people probably heard it here first. Like, some people might have known that, but a lot of people probably didn't know that. Right. And I love the generosity of your spirit. And just in that someone's coming to me with curiosity, like, I'm happy to answer that question in the right context and the right relationship. And just being open to that. And not everyone is. And that's okay for them too. And honestly, it can change. I've said this before on the podcast, like, day to day, depending upon what's going on, like, it just might not be the day. Depending upon like if there's something out there in the news, something happening in our society, someone else got killed or shot or hurt, like, it might not be the day because it's just the emotional toll of being I was going to say different, but we're not different. We're just considered different here in this country, which is also bizarre because there's a lot of different people. Why is it that anyone is different? You know, but anyways, that goes back to the other conversation we were having about the West. So I appreciate you answering my question and giving me space to, and making me feel comfortable enough that I could ask it. Okay. So I have one or two more questions for you. This one might be a hard one, so I apologize in advance. Grace, what question are you afraid to ask or uncomfortable in asking when it comes to anti-racism, like today, this part of your journey? I don't ask all my guests this question, but it's one that I'm very interested in. Like, what is the question that you're like, man, I've been thinking about this, or man, I don't want anyone to know that I like, this is a question that I have. Of course, obviously on a podcast might not be the best place to ask, but the reason why I have this question is because we all have questions that we're afraid to ask or uncomfortable to ask, maybe something we think we should know, or even just a burning question that you're like, man, I would really love to understand this more. What is that for you, Grace?
Definitely. It has to do with pulse checking. You know, can I say this? Can I do that? So I will typically be afraid, but very much want to. If I am buying this and wearing it, am I appropriating it? If I use this term, is that offensive? And am I appropriating it? So those are usually the questions I want to ask. I don't have a person to actually ask and pulse check that against all the time. So that's the other thing too, is for those who are on their journey, their anti-racism journey, if they're given space to be able to make those honest mistakes, I think that would also help people out. Because you also learn by doing. And I think there's just a lot there that can be potentially offensive, and sometimes you don't always have that resource, you know, to check against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love the thoughtfulness and the thought process. And I think there's a huge lesson to take from that, because this idea of like, is this offensive? Like, am I appropriating? Like, what kinds of considerations should I have as I, you know, intersect with different cultures and experiences and conversations? Having that as a check in your mind is going to, number one, you're going to catch some things you wouldn't catch otherwise if you weren't thinking about it. But even just the consideration keeps you like more curious and more open to opportunities for yourself to improve. And, you know, the idea that your anti-racism journey starts with you. It doesn't start with marching. It doesn't start with taking a class. It starts with you in your own world and thinking about how you're navigating and what are those beliefs that you have that are poisoned, if you will, by racist ideals and stereotypes and biases. The self-examination is a huge part of anyone's anti-racism journey. And typically we start somewhere else, which is fine. And then we get to the awareness of, I have a lot to learn and I have some things that I need to shift inside of myself as well. Like, I haven't told this story for a really long time, I don't think, but like my mom, when we were younger, when we were teenagers, now I grew up in Indianapolis, Indiana. We lived in predominantly like white neighborhoods, my school's probably like 20 to 30% African-American, but I was in the smart classes. So that meant that I was typically isolated from most of the people around me and brown people specifically. And so just to give that background, my mother grew up in Kentucky in the north of the South. And so she's a Kentucky, she's a farm girl. And my mom used to like say things that were homophobic and it would like make me crazy. I'm like, mom, you can't say that. Mom, that's homophobic. Mom, 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 mom. It wasn't that many times, but she said it enough that it was really like, oh my gosh, mom, please. And it was just a thing. And then I moved to Chicago in my adult life and I happened to live at the very top of Boys Town. And Chicago has an epic pride parade, like one of the biggest ones in the country. And my mom came one year accidentally during pride, or happenstance during pride. And I'm like, well, I'm going to the pride parade, mom. You can come with me because you need to see what this is all about. And, you know, the pride parade is not what gay people and LGBTQ plus community is all about, but it's a celebration of the different aspects and identities that exist. And she came with me and she loved it. She felt the love, she felt the unity, and it shifted something in her. Some prejudices, some biases, some false beliefs, some messages and narratives that have coming from the outside. It shifted something inside of her. And she always wanted to come after that. She actually brought a friend another year. And so it was this like evolution, right, that happened. But it started with her inadvertently having the opportunity to examine herself and some of the things that she believed in, and then seeing out there in the wide world, this isn't tracking with what I thought or what I heard or what I thought I knew or what I learned. This is something totally different. And the feeling of it, I think, is really what really transformed her. Because if anyone's ever been to a gay pride parade, it is a celebration of love and of life and of identity and uniqueness and sameness and all these different things, right? So she felt that, and that changed her fundamentally. And so how do we, you know, be proactive even? How do we seek out ways to challenge our beliefs when we know that they're maybe not in alignment with these larger values of anti-racism, of unity, of things of that nature, and being able to be introspective in that way, and then being willing and open and flexible enough to actually change and to do that hard work? Because I'm sure at first she was nervous. She was like, oh, wait, what are we going to do? Because she has these beliefs. And then after, she was like, that was amazing. I'm coming back next year. and, you know, I don't have to call my mom out. It's been years. This was a long time ago. I lived in Chicago, like 2005 through 2012. I haven't had to call my mom out on saying anything about the LGBTQ plus community since then. It changed her fundamentally.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So Grace, this has been an incredible conversation. Thank you so much for sharing yourself. Thank you for creating space for me to share stories too. I had the best time. Grace, is there a place where people can find out more about you that maybe they can dip into your love of plants? Any spaces where they can find you if they want to know more or learn more about what you're doing out there in the world?
Of course. I do have a LinkedIn, Grace Eco. My last name is spelled YCO. And if you would rather Instagram, my plant profile is eco-friendly, but eco-friendly is with a Y instead of an E.
I love that. That's awesome. Grace, thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you for listening to the Inclusion First podcast. We are always collecting and answering your most important questions on anti-racism. So if there's something on your mind, head on over to the inclusionfirstproject.org and click on Ask a Question. We'd love for you to give us your like, your share, your follow, and especially your review, wherever you find us. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will talk to you next time.